Welcome to Thanks for Sharing, the podcast where we explore all things recovery, healing, and relationship. I'm John T.
And I'm Jackie P.
This is episode 3, Getting into Therapy. So I want to start this episode out with a question. Do you remember your first experience in therapy, Jackie?
I do.
Do you want to talk about it?
My first experience with therapy, I was attending a university. So I was about 21, I think. And I was in my third year. And so I had just started. It was my undergraduate, but I was getting my undergraduate in social work. And so I had this idea that maybe I should, you know, go to therapy. I knew I wanted to go to graduate school and be a therapist. And so I thought, therapy might be a good idea. And I can experience kind of what it's like to be a client. But also I knew that I had some family dysfunction. I knew that there were probably some things for me to work on and not just kind of go in this, you know, my life is perfect and I want to know what it's like to be a client. And one of the things that I remember is, you know, as I was learning some things and my therapist was using some words that felt like, oh, yes, that's the right word. Like, that's the word that describes what I've experienced or lived with, and I didn't have the vocabulary. So in some ways, it was exciting for me to finally have the vocabulary. And one of the harsh realities was that not everybody in my life was excited that I now had the right words and I could start labeling what was happening. And one of the biggest fights I ever had with my mom was when I came home and was saying, like, I understand that our family was dysfunctional. And it was just using that word was,
how dare you?
Yeah, it was a huge fight. And I kind of had to, I spent probably at least an hour convincing her that I really didn't think we were dysfunctional. And how could that be a word to use with our family?
That is so different from my first experience in therapy. I was thinking about it this morning, driving into the office. And I thought my first experience in therapy was when I was a teenager. It was actually when I was a lot younger than that. I was probably 6 or 7. And my mom was a nurse at a hospital, and they had, I think it was like an employee assistance thing, like they brought in a family therapist and said, we're going to do family therapy sessions for any of our employees who want it for like the next 3 weeks. So I remember loading up in our full-size van. I think there were probably 5 kids in my family at that time. Maybe my littlest sister was born. I don't remember. So we all load up in our van, and we probably fought the whole way to the hospital. And I remember sitting in this room and just being really confused, like, why are we here? Why are we talking to this person? I remember drawing pictures of a video game that we liked to play together. It was on our computer, and laughing about it, and then, like, nothing else. I think it might have just been one session, maybe two. And then when I was 16, the girl that I was obsessed with and was convinced that I was going to marry, because you know that kind of stuff at 16.
Right.
The night that I was convinced, like, we're in love and she's coming over and I'm going to tell her this, she came over to break up with me. it was a really, let's just say it was a really big shift in momentum, for me. And probably about a week and a half later, I was very understandably depressed. And I think I was crying. I was telling my mom how overwhelmed I was. And she was like, I have an appointment with my therapist this week. Why don't you take it? So I went to this, it's a very nice man. He sat behind a desk. I think I might have laid on a couch because I thought that's what I was supposed to do.
Why not stretch out?
And even previous to this, I think my mom had talked to him about some of the struggles I was having, and he would recommend books for her to give to
me.
And so, like, I had these books, one on depression and one on, like, overcoming pornography addiction, and so I kind of had these, and he's like, I remember him talking to me, how have you been liking the books? And I was thinking, like, I haven't been reading them. Like, I didn't ask for these. And I probably had 6 or 7 sessions with him, and I got on an antidepressant, which was actually helpful. Like, I felt like it gave me some breathing room. But then, like, it just stopped for some reason. Apparently, I was fixed. I think the first time I had an adult experience in therapy was when I was feeling really at the end of my rope with addiction and like something's got to change. And so I think I mentioned this in our first episode. I'd kind of fought with my ecclesiastical leader for like 6 months. I was like, I don't really need therapy. Quit suggesting it. Like, I'll figure this out. And then I think I started having some success in therapy or getting something from therapy when I was realizing, like, I need something different. And then I've had a few therapists since then, but that was fun to remember.
Isn't that great?
So we want to spend some time today talking about the role that therapy can play in your healing. And I think, we've got to get our biases out there, our affiliations out there. Jackie and I are licensed therapists, so we have a bias towards this. We believe in what we do. But I think first we need to look at, how do you know if therapy is even right for you right now?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. You know, for me, looking at the times that I've gone to therapy, but really the first time, because I think once I had gone the first time and knew that it was helpful and that it got me to a certain place, like it was a little bit easier the next couple times that I would go to therapy to take that leap and to say, oh, I need to go see a therapist. But that first time, it was just kind of this, for me, it was kind of this nagging feeling that like, something's off and I can't make sense of it myself. Mm-hmm. And I don't really know what to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I Patrick Carnes in his lectures and his book talks about, you know, for addiction, that there comes a point when every addict knows that they can't keep living the way they've been living. And I think that's true whether you're an addict or not. You know, when we're looking at therapy, I think there comes a point when you have some amount of awareness, even if it's limited, that you don't know what you're doing and that you might need help and that things can't just keep going on the way they've been going on.
Yeah, and I would say that's definitely the point where it's time to start considering help that you haven't considered before.
Yeah.
Like I remember as a young adult getting into what I would say was my first real experience with therapy. I think utilized every resource that I had at my fingertips and nothing was changing. And that's when it started making sense to me that I ought to talk to a professional, somebody that doesn't just dabble in this, but somebody who has worked with it, somebody who has some extra knowledge about it, that can help me in ways that other people or other resources couldn't. So once you've established that therapy is where you need to go, I think the real trick is finding the right therapist.
Which can be equally hard.
Oh, I think that may even be harder than coming to the realization that you need somebody.
Yeah.
In a lot of the research that's been done around what makes therapy effective in general, there have been very few definitive studies, very few things that we can point to and say that makes therapy effective. One of the things that we can point to is when you have a open, trusting relationship with your therapist, when you feel good about the relationship with your therapist, that time and time again contributes to the kind of successful outcomes you want to have.
And that doesn't mean that you consider your therapist a friend.
Absolutely.
Like the conversation that's happening in session is not kind of this friendly chat about things. I mean, I have had clients who will say to me, though, like, if you weren't my therapist, I could see us being friends.
Yeah.
But there's clearly that distinction that, like, I'm your therapist and you're my client. And so we aren't friends, although I like my clients and I hope that my clients like me and they feel comfortable and they trust me, which hopefully we do with our friends. There needs to be also those boundaries that say, you know, I am your therapist and I hold confidential information.
Yeah, and I would say as I've shopped for therapists throughout the years, there have been therapists that I have talked to on the phone, even some that I've gone to see, that I think that's been their approach is I'll be your friend, I'll be a safe place. And that actually did not feel safe to me. That didn't feel good to me. When I would talk to a therapist on the phone, a lot of therapists will offer like a 15-minute phone consultation. If you're looking for a therapist, take advantage of that.
Right.
And we'd be talking on the phone, I'd outline, and they would challenge me right away, or they would say, here's what I'm seeing. And it was something like, it was a little bit of hard feedback.
Yeah.
That actually increased my trust in them, because I thought, like, this person will see things that I can't already see.
Yeah. And I even, as a therapist, think that sometimes, like, it is my job to say things to people that nobody else in their life maybe dares to say or is seeing. Maybe they're too familiar with it. But if, as the therapist, I can't say the hard things, I'm probably not doing my job.
I at a training earlier this year, one of the presenters was talking about an experience with a client who hired a lot of prostitutes. And this is a moment of clarity for me in the role of a therapist and what to expect from a therapist. She had said to this client, you pay your prostitutes to tell you lies about yourself. I'm your therapist, and you pay me to tell you the truth about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most of the time when we get into therapy, it's because there's some difficult truths that we're having a hard time wrapping our minds around and wrapping our hearts around. So the therapist shopping is important. I'd say it's important to not just look for credentials, which would be like some that indicates the education level the person's got.
Right.
But there are specialties after education that I think are critical.
Well, which I think is important, you know, that we as therapists know that simply getting your master's degree in whatever field, marriage and family therapy or counseling or social work, which you and I both have our master's degree in social work, that gives you a general education.
Yep.
I mean, it's more specific than, say, a bachelor's degree. But, you know, just getting your master's degree doesn't necessarily make you a specialist or an expert in everything.
Mm-hmm. When I am seeking medical care, if it's an issue that I feel like is on the fringes of what a general practitioner can do, I usually look for a specialist.
Right.
And I think whatever issue you're facing, you will be best served by somebody who has devoted time and effort in their career to understanding that issue.
Yes.
You may not need to see somebody who knows a little bit about everything. You might need to see somebody who knows quite a bit about some specific things, because that's what you're
facing.
Right.
So, you know, just an example, like if I have strep throat, I'm going to just go to my general practitioner. I'm just going to go to my family doctor, and their competencies are plenty able to cover whatever comes with strep throat. But, you know, when I was having thyroid issues, I was going to go to, you know, I went to a lot of different doctors, but
too many.
It took too long to figure this out. But, you know, I'm looking at the specialist area. I'm not just going to my general practitioner for issues. Even though it's the same region of the body, there was a little bit more going on, and it was much more complex than strep throat, for example.
Well, I think the specialist thing brings up another really important part of finding the right therapist and the right timing for therapy. I would love it if my clients came in the door with all of the resources they needed to get all of the treatment that they needed right when they needed it.
Yes, that would be amazing.
But the reality is there's limits on time, there's limits on money, and that's part of the balance that you do with therapy. I think before you start with therapy, it's a good idea to have an idea of how much you can give to it. How much time can you give to it? How much money can you give to it? And often, like I found as I've started working in therapy, that as I get into it and I'm getting more out of it, I'm willing to allocate more resources. But there are some definite, like, hard stops. There's only so much money in the paycheck before that runs out. So you really want to evaluate, what's the kind of money that I have? What's kind of time I have? Do I have insurance coverage that will help with this? And then do your homework. Know what it's going to cost.
But recognize, you know, whatever that looks like, this is going to be an investment in yourself.
And that's, I think that's the biggest part that's important to remember. This is an investment that will pay off over time.
Mm-hmm.
And so looking at the sticker shock now, you have to remember that there's going to be benefit that will hopefully last for years or maybe decades or maybe the rest of your life. I think the money balance is really important, and be upfront with your therapist about what you can do and what you can't do, so that treatment can respect your limitations and you don't feel on the hook for getting something that you can't afford or can't commit to.
Yes. And I think that's important too. I mean, sometimes it's maybe our financial resources that limit how much time we're going to be in therapy. But I've had clients where their emotional bandwidth also limits how much time they're going to be in therapy. You know, you and I say, you know, when addicts are coming in or their partners are coming in to get therapy, we'll usually say this is a 3 to 5 year process. Mm-hmm. Now, I've had clients, though, where that 3 to 5 years is broken up in segments, mm-hmm. because, you know, maybe emotionally they come in and they start to get some realizations about some things, and that can be overwhelming. You know, mm-hmm. we talk sometimes about, you know, sometimes feeling like as a client that you're drinking from a fire hose, and it's just coming so much and with such a speed, and it takes some time to digest that. And, you know, so I've had clients who I work with for maybe a year, and then they take some time off. And then they call me back and say, hey, I've got some more stuff I need to work on. And, you know, I mean, ideally, would that be the best way to do it? Maybe not. But it also works. I've seen clients be able to work it that way. And usually when they leave after a year, you know, we have that conversation about the fact that we haven't finished.
Yeah. One of my more recent therapists really helped me with that. I remember sitting in his office one day sobbing over an issue that we were working on. And I said to him, I thought that I resolved this. I thought this was over. And I outlined to him, like, here's all the work that I did on that. Here's where I got in my life. And I was so distraught that I was back there. And he looked at me and he said, John, like, life is not linear. We don't have a start line and a finish line. Mm-hmm. He said, it's more like orbits. And he said, maybe you orbited that issue a while ago, and you did, from what you could see and where you were orbiting, you resolved what you could. Mm-hmm. And then you moved on to orbit something else. And he said, you're back in your life orbiting this again. And he said, maybe you need to get used to orbiting things, yeah. and coming back to orbit. And that, I think that was one of the most valuable things I've gotten from therapy. Right. And I think that increased some of that bandwidth.
Yeah.
But know that too, that when you go to therapy, while you are going to work really hard on what you see and what you can do right then, that likely as life goes on, you'll get some other perspectives to some of those issues and some other angles to those issues that you might need some help with.
Mm-hmm. I know for me, you know, initially when I first went in, like I said, I was like, you know, maybe 21, going to college. I was single. I didn't have any kids. And when I became a parent and started, you know, really taking parenthood seriously and raising my kids, there were issues from my own childhood that came up in a completely different way that wouldn't have come up had I not been a parent.
Yeah. And of course, when those issues came up and you weren't expecting it, you just went right through them, right?
Right. I just, you know, I had all the skills. I was a therapist, right? So I just breezed through it.
Well, and the rosy ending to both of our stories with therapy is we never tried to weasel out of facing our problems again.
Right.
That's actually false. I think it's important too, and we want to talk about this in this episode, is the concept of bypass. Mm-hmm. Like Jackie had talked about earlier, sometimes when people go to therapy, they don't realize what they're signing up to look at. And as a therapist, I often get surprised by where sessions go or what comes out. Mm-hmm. Because you never know where it's going to go when you get in those emotional veins and you start connecting.
Because that would be one of the myths of therapy, that your therapist knows from session one what every session needs to look like.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a myth on your side that you know what it looks like. I know, right. as a client sitting on the other side of the room, it's important for me to drop that expectation that I'll know what this is supposed to look like. Mm-hmm. So when we come up against that really hard stuff, we want to start running. We call that bypass. And
yeah.
I think there's a really good reason why we try to bypass. The laws of physics state that we'll try to conserve energy where we can conserve energy, and we'll try to keep momentum where we've got momentum.
Right. And we look for the path of least resistance.
Absolutely.
And that's really what bypass is, you know, we might see like, oh, okay, that I see up ahead, it's getting dark, you know, maybe there's lightning and thunder and I've got to go through that. And I'm saying, I don't want to do that. So we start to look for a different route. You know, is there another way that I can get to where I need to go without going through that pain and that darkness and some of the mess that we have to, you know, trudge through in our own therapy process?
I back to this therapist that talked to me about orbiting, I think that's another valuable thing mm-hmm. that I learned in my time with him, is that try as I might to avoid the darkness, try as I might to clean that up, it was a part of life.
Yeah.
And I was in need of accepting that. Instead of trying to clean things up and make things look pretty, to realize that in nature and in life, messes are everywhere. That's actually one of the things that I think I appreciate most about nature and the outdoors and the way that our world grows, is that it's very beautiful chaos.
Like, yes.
Walk into a forest. It's not a manicured garden, but I would take a forest over a manicured garden any day. And so we can get into some bypass or some ways of avoiding when it doesn't look clean enough for us. One of the ways that I did a lot of that, and you mentioned this in your story in our first episode, religion or spirituality is a big way that people try to bypass yeah. some of the really tough pain, darkness, things like that.
And may find that it works for a time period.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said in my story, it worked for many years. And was really comforting. And I will often say it worked until it didn't.
Yeah. And here, I think, is another place where there's some myths about therapy. I think a lot of people can see how therapists behave and approach things and how religion behaves and approach things and assume that these two things are diametrically opposed,
mm-hmm.
that they don't complement each other. I have found as a therapist that spirituality and therapy go hand in hand really, really well and are mm-hmm. trying to get at some of the same things, making yes. meaning out of the suffering, finding community and finding ways to cope.
Right. Well, and getting us even out of our own story sometimes and connecting with something bigger than us,
mm-hmm.
you know, that we know that if it's just really all about me, we're probably not going to have the best mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And so getting to this place, you know, of a higher power or something that is bigger than me is actually helpful to us as human beings.
Yeah. So Jackie, what are some of the indications you would say to look for to know that you're in bypass or know that you're approaching bypass?
So, you know, one of the things that I find for myself, and I hear this with clients sometimes, is when I am looking for the checklist.
Yeah.
When I'm looking for, I do A, B, C, and D, and I get E.
Yeah.
And just spell it out, and it looks really organized, and it looks really put together. I know that I'm looking for, you know, the path of least resistance.
That reminds me of those brain teasers that still drive me crazy, like, look for the pattern. If A plus B plus C plus D equals a triangle, then what does D plus E plus F plus G equal? And I'm like, I don't know, a unicorn?
Right.
And then they have the answer there, and it's like, that makes no sense to me.
Right.
I think that's a lot more how our emotional problems and our psyche work.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, like, we're not even, the problem may be alphabetical, but the solution is, like, geometric.
Right.
It can be completely different.
And I get it because, you know, when a lot of times when we're in a process of self-examination, when we're in therapy, things feel somewhat chaotic.
Yeah.
We feel unorganized. And so we want it organized. We want predictability. We're looking for certainty because somewhere in our life there's uncertainty.
I think one of the things that bypass of any kind gets me away from is relationships, people that are actually calming and soothing to me. I'm in a bit of a transition in my life right now, and yesterday on my way to work, I was having a bit of a freak out. And I got a call from somebody in my recovery community just saying, I haven't heard from you in a while. How are you doing?
Mm.
And I said, I feel like I'm about to emotionally vomit on you. Like, can I tell you what's going on? He's like, well, I asked. So I told him what was going on for me and the fears that I was having. And I realized that probably 2 minutes into our conversation, I started to feel very differently about the problems or the chaos or the uncertainty that was ahead. And something that the checklists don't give us is safe people who are organic and adaptable and who can move to hold us.
Right.
Checklists don't do that. Checklists work in this column,
mm-hmm.
but if you move to this column, they don't catch up with you. People do.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that a good therapist and good support do is they move with us, they yeah. adapt with us.
Which I think is, you know, almost kind of ironic because in those moments that when we're looking for uncertainty, or when we're looking for certainty, sorry, when we are looking for certainty, even if we get it, in some way, it doesn't really feel good, because I think there is a part of us that know, that we know in the back of our mind or wherever that is, that life is uncertain.
Yeah.
And life is unpredictable. So while we're, you know, that maybe the fear or the anxiety of the unpredictability and the uncertainty sends us into something where we can control, we can predict, you know, I'm going to be in charge of what the outcome is, it doesn't really satisfy us.
Yeah.
I mean, it does on some level, but there's all this other stuff that we are bypassing, that we are leaving untouched.
I think for me, it's like brought some immediate relief, but the monster's still behind the door.
Right.
That makes me think of another way that I know I'm in bypass is when I'm boiling things down and making things really simple. Mm. When a new person comes to my 12-step meeting, or sometimes when I'll get a new client and they will outline for me, like, here's exactly what the problem is and here's what I need to work on. There's a part of me that's kind of like, that is so cute. You think it's that simple. Like, that would be great if we just needed to work on the communication skills in your marriage.
Right.
Like, if you guys could get the right vocabulary, everything would be fine. Like, bless you for thinking it's that simple.
Yes.
But I think life is messy and it's complicated. And when I'm finding myself boiling it down to, okay, this is all I've got to focus on, or that's all I've got to focus on, or maybe if I'm feeling really generous and a little bit crazy, there's two things I need to focus on. But the truth is, our life and our emotions and our relationships are several moving parts with a lot of different factors in there. Mm-hmm. It's way too complicated to be boiled down to one or two principles.
Right. Or one or two options.
Yeah.
You know, it's either this or it's this. And, you know, sometimes when we walk out of a therapy session or a group session and we recognize that I went in thinking, is it option A or is it option B? And I came out thinking, oh my gosh, there's like 10 options here that I was missing.
And one of them's a triangle, not even a letter.
Or a circle.
Yeah. We'd call that black and white thinking.
Yeah.
And again, I think when we've seen neurologically in fMRIs and other brain scans that what we need when we're feeling unsettled is safe relationships. Mm-hmm. We don't need answers. We don't need explanations. We need safe relationships. Yeah.
So another, you know, therapy term that we use for that sometimes is cognitive dissonance.
Yeah.
Where, you know, as human beings, we don't necessarily get comfortable in cognitive dissonance. And so, you know, as human beings, we try to be comfortable. So cognitive dissonance would have, you know, two ideas that are somewhat competing. You know, another term for this would be they're a paradox.
Yeah.
Where, you know, we can't just say, you know, the answer is always A, go with A. And sometimes it's, you know, well, this is true and this is true. And they seem to be competing with each other or canceling each other out. And yet we can't eliminate one, you know, and so that's actually staying in the dissonance. It's staying kind of in the messiness and the competition of these ideas. And our human tendency is to try to find, well, which one's the best, though, or which one is more true, instead of staying with both of these are true and I get to hold both of them.
I think one of the biggest gifts that...
Or many of them.
Yeah. I when you were talking about the messiness and, you know, trying to make it clean or make it A or B, I was thinking one of I think the most valuable gifts that therapy has given me is I know that I can be safe in a mess. Mm-hmm. I know that I can feel okay in messiness. Even if the mess doesn't feel okay, I can feel okay.
Right.
So we're about out of time for this episode. I've got a feeling we've got more to talk about on this.
Yeah.
At some point.
Yeah.
What would you say, Jackie, like, what's your pointer for getting started on this issue, if this is something that you need to work on?
I mean, I think a lot of times my answer a lot of times is awareness is always the beginning place, you know, because we can't change what we don't know. And so if we don't have some level of awareness that bypass happens, we're not going to be looking for it. Mm-hmm. We're much more likely to fall into it and then argue about whether or not we're in it. And so just kind of knowing that it's very, you know, even for us who we are therapists, we help clients in their bypass, we still have that tendency in our own life to maybe bypass a work, though.
Yeah.
But maybe for me, I can do the bypass.
I know enough about this concept. I can stay above it. It'll be right. Fine. Yeah. I would say for getting into therapy, if it's something that's been kicking around in the back of your mind, start by opening up some options for yourself. Most of the time that I've gone therapist shopping, it's probably taken me about 2 months from, and maybe 2 months is generous, 2 months from knowing I needed to get in and get some help and actually getting in and getting some help. And I carried around this list of potential therapists for probably half of that time.
Yeah.
So start opening up some options. Look at what's available. Look at the problems that you're having. See if there's people around you that specialize in that, that can help you with that. If you're in a 12-step group, you might talk to group members afterward about, do you see a therapist? Are you getting help that way?
Uh-huh.
So start opening up some options for yourself.
And one little thing that I would add here, I would say, I mean, we have a website, right? We're listed on several different other websites, not our own website, you know, because of our specialty. So we're out there on the web. But I would still say probably our number one referral source is word of mouth. And, you know, so if you're thinking about going to therapy, start listening to your friends. Start listening to the people that you interact with, because you'll probably start to hear, like, I bet they've been to therapy, or yeah. I wonder about that. And then you can maybe ask and say, who did you go to? Or, you know, you don't have to do a full disclosure to this friend. But sometimes as you're reading about and contemplating getting into therapy, some of the words that you might read on different therapist sites or different things like that, you're actually going to hear some of your friends using, and that can be a good indication that they might know somebody or they've been to therapy.
They're part of the club.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're out of time for this episode, so thank you for listening, and we will be back next week.
Bye. At the end of another episode, we want to remind you that nobody has time for perfection. We are pursuing progress.
Remember the prayer of the perfectionist. Help me remember, I can't do it all. Help me to take things one step at a time, and that the only step I need to focus on is the next right step for me. Help me to remember that life is a journey. Help me to be able to separate all that I am learning from all that I have to do. Help me to remember that I am not alone, that I can ask for help. Help me to strive for frequent awakenings, not mastery. I am enough. Amen.
You can find more Thanks for Sharing at www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com or on Facebook and Instagram at Thanks for Sharing Podcast.
Disclaimer, this podcast is solely for the purpose of information and entertainment and does not constitute therapy, nor should it replace competent professional help.